Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Program. Welcome to tonight's show. No, I'm not really Mike Malloy. I'm somebody else. I just sound like him. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, so stick around for the duration, if you can. And a rather lengthy essay that I've got to share with you, because the news was out today that Barack Obama has decided to authorize another, 10,000, 20,000 troops to Afghanistan, which is madness. I'm losing faith. But I've got to share this with you. We'll get to that a little bit later. From Prairie 2, let's start the program with the bad economic news. Prairie 2 writes, the Dow took a big dive today, largely on the big decline in bank stocks. Nationalization of the big banks is picking up steam among Republicans, led by Alan Greenspan and Lindsey Graham, who claim other prominent Republicans are on board with this. How about that? These people bankrupted everybody with their insane economic policies and are now trying to pretend they are the voice of reason. They point out, correctly, that these banks are now valued by the market at less than what the government has already put into them, not wanting anybody to notice that these geniuses put the government money into them rather than admit the banks were toast before the election. And it is likely that the real value of these banks is a negative number. Besides trying to hide their own culpability, the Republicans are probably trying to get out in front of this in the hope they can keep the same robber baron dynasties in charge of the banks. If this were China, there would be a special on organs for transplant. In other news, Obama will make an investment banker the new unofficial car czar. This guy has a history representing the government in taking apart the steel industry in the wake of globalization, but he is credited with keeping the steel unions from being wiped out in the process. GM says it will need a $30 billion loan to keep going. Sounds like a lot until you consider the Obama administration intends to pump $1,000 billion into the secondary credit market. So what the hell is just chump change? All right, something to get your blood pressure up and your heart started here at the beginning of the program. So, Alan Greenspan and Lindsey Graham, and other prominent Republicans. Yeah, we want socialization. We want socialism. We want democratic socialism. But we're doing it because Clinton caused it. That's right. Jesus God, I never thought I would live long enough to see Republicans call for socialism in the United States. Unbelievable, huh? Not that that's a bad thing, but I wonder how many Republicans out there, you know, the head bobbers, the knuckle draggers, the Christian Armageddonists, the people who wander around saying, I'll vote for a Republican. I wonder how many of these jerkwads realize that the Republican leadership, the unofficial leadership, because the real leaders are Rush Limbaugh, Joe the Plumber, and the hoe from Mozilla. But, you know, how many of these bobbleheads out here who insist on voting Republican and in the process slicing their own throats, how many realize that it's Republicans who are bringing the dreaded S word into their lives? Socialism! Oh, my goodness! Jerks. I mean, really. This is a great idea. This is from Associated Press, this idea. Oh, I think the banks should be nationalized. I've said before, long before this mess. Nationalize the banks, transportation, health care, and communications. And nationalize it. And then allow entrepreneurs in those areas, small entrepreneurs, to do what they want to do, but everything has gotten, you know, I mean, how many times have we heard in the past 6 months, well, this or that is too big to fail. Oh, it's too big to fail. We can't let it fail. Well, once something gets that big, then it either becomes absorbed by the government or it becomes the government. Which one do you want, Truth Seeker? Huh? And you notice how these free market trickle-down lying sons of bitches, these Republicans who spent the last 25 years telling oi polloi, oh, don't worry. As we take care of the rich, you little people will get the crumbs, and the crumbs will be big. Isn't it amazing how quiet these swine are? Except the ones in Congress. Well, now, yeah, they're trying to. The Republicans are trying to paint themselves as the saviors. Yeah, Obama's plan is. I don't know who said it today. I heard somebody say it. Maybe it was on Overman's program. But I will believe these filthy pukehead Republicans. The minute I will do a complete about face and throw my arms open to my Republican brethren and sistren on the day that one of these unconscionable bastards who voted against the money pump into the economy, so-called stimulus plan, on the day that one of these thugs says, we don't want your money. Over here in the 9th District of Georgia, we don't want the goddamn money. We don't believe in that communism. Until that day, I'll continue my time-tested belief and realization based on nothing but truth and fact that the Republican Party needs to be executed. It needs to be destroyed. It needs to be decapitated. It needs to be ended because it is a terrorist organization. Look what they've done. Compare what the Republican Party has done to the United States with what this Al-Qaeda has done to the United States. The bigger of the two, the larger, the more of a threat to our country, our way of life, our families, our children, is the Republican Party. It is a terrorist organization. And you know who says so? George W. Bush. You look at the Americans don't like me, so I'll pass this dictator law act of 19 or 2000, whatever the hell it was. If you take a look in there, you will see what is described as a terrorist organization or a terror simp organization. And if you read it, you'll find out that the Republican Party is clearly defined in George Bush's definition. Not that I, you know, want to go with George Bush with anything. But, you know, for the Republican bobbleheads out there, you know who you are. Blah, blah, blah. Yep, I'll vote Republican. Blah, blah, blah. Why? Because blah, blah, blah. I don't want the queers to get married. Blah, blah, blah. But it's destroying your life. Oh, I know. But blah, blah, blah. I don't want the queers to get married. I'm a Christian. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, God. So the day that anyone or 6 or 20 or 100 or 200 of these swine who make up the Republicans who somehow steal elections to get sent back into office in the House and the Senate, the day one of them turns the money down, one of them, just one, will be the day I might reconsider my belief that Republicans are terrorists. The entire Republican Party is a terrorist organization. Or not. We'll see. Anyway, the homeowners. Oh, my God. I got to tell you, this great idea is catching on around the country, and I think it's wonderful. If I were in the position of having my home foreclosed on, I would do exactly what is being suggested by the Consumer Warning Network. And some people, nobody knows how many, but quite a number of people apparently are following the advice. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Yeah. You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Past the hour. All right, here's the deal. This comes from Zephyr Hills, Florida, which is right outside Tampa. This woman we'll call Kathy lost her job, was about to lose her house, but then she made a seemingly simple request of the bank, and that was, show me the original mortgage paperwork. Just like that, the foreclosure proceedings came to a abrupt halt. Now, this particular woman, Kathy, and other homeowners around the country, according to what I have here, are managing to stop foreclosures by employing a strategy that goes to the heart of the whole nationwide mess. As we all know, during this real estate slobbering frenzy of the past decade, mortgages were sold and resold, bundled in securities, peddled to investors, and in so many cases, the original note signed by the homeowner was lost. Stored away in a distant warehouse, sent to India, destroyed, chopped in little pieces. It's gone. So persuading a judge to compel production of that hard-to-find or non-existent document, you know, show me the mortgage. At the very least, that can delay foreclosures, buying the homeowner some time and turning the pressure on the lender to renegotiate the mortgage. You know, show me. Show what? What? I owe you? Show me the mortgage. They can't do it. And for the reasons stated by the Associated Press, the mortgage itself was not literally, but in terms of its power of indebtedness, was that's what all this, or a good portion of this, is all about. The scam that was run by the financial services industry, taking literally millions of so-called subprime mortgages, slicing and dicing them, putting together with all sorts of garbage and crap and broken glass and rusted plumbing, and selling it to freaks and fools and knaves and greedhead bastards around the world. Hey, here you go. Show me the mortgage. And they can't do it. In interviews with the AP, lawyers, homeowners, and advocates outlined the produce the note strategy. Exactly how many homeowners have employed it is unknown, nor is it clear how successful it's been. Some judges are more sympathetic than others. Then it lists the name of a Tampa lawyer whose Consumer Warning Network website offers the free court documents used to file a request. And this website, Chris Hoyer, is the Tampa lawyer. And it's Consumer Warning Network. You'll have to Google it. This organization has played a major role in promoting the produce the note strategy. Attorney Hoyer said, quote, we knew early on that the only relief that would ever come to people would be to the people who were in their houses. They're there. Nobody was going to fashion any relief for people who have already lost their homes. So your only hope is to hang on any way you can. And then when these vicious, snarling, saliva-drooping, predatory bastards go to foreclose your home, go to court and have an attorney. You're going to have to get one and tell the attorney to request of the judge that the people trying to eat you alive and kill your children and destroy your name, tell them to produce the documents that show what that original mortgage was. I love it. I love it. Desperate times call for desperate actions, right? And this idea, Jeff Cohen, our old buddy from FAIR.org, he's not with them any longer. He was one of the founders of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. He writes for Truth Out. He writes for a lot of people right now. He used to be at NBC until they let him go. But he's got an idea, and I think this is great. And Jeff writes, it's his plan to get NBC out of last place in the television ratings. And he says, here's my idea. A series of NBC News primetime specials featuring spectacular ambushes of big-time criminals lured into what they expect to be pleasurable surroundings. But with hidden cameras whirring, the started villain is dramatically confronted with the evidence of his massive crimes as millions of viewers look on in scorn and righteous amusement. Does it sound familiar? Yeah, that's because NBC News has scored huge ratings with the To Catch a Predator series, you know, where they, you know, these sex offenders, potential sex offenders, are lured via the internet to what they thought would be sex with kids and instead got caught by NBC cameras and cops that were hiding. So that's the model. But Jeff Cohen has a different idea. I'll share it with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
It's flying across the sky, throwing shadows on our lives. Leave us helpless, 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 helpless,
get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, Jeff Cohen, one of the founders of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and a former NBC employee, has written at truthout.com, about what should appear on NBC, this plan to get NBC out of last place in the ratings. Anyway, he says it'll be one of those programs based on the idea of To Catch a Predator, where mostly Republicans, I think, were caught wanting to have sex with 12 and 14-year-old boys and girls, and when they got to the assigned meeting place, they were met with NBC cameras and exposure. And what a hit it was on NBC's ratings. It was called To Catch a Predator. So Jeff Cohen has an idea. He says he wants to do something where big-time criminals are lured into what they expect to be pleasurable surroundings. But the hidden cameras come out, and the guy comes out from behind the curtain. Jeff says, but my proposal doesn't involve sex abusers or potential sex abusers. I'm talking about men who've launched illegal wars, mass murder, torture, dictatorship, and their household names. Here's my advice. Go big. Go after superstars and only well-documented slam dunk cases of war crimes. Coming to NBC next week, To Catch a Cheney. Next month, To Catch a Kissinger. And how do you lure such big names to NBC News for the ambush interview? Simply invite them. That's all. When you take a look at the kind of babied treatment they've received over the years, these thugs will come running quicker than a net pervert to Lolita. Trust me, Jeff writes. The element of surprise is on NBC's side, since these Uber officials are confident their crimes will remain eternally off limits. To lure Dick Cheney from his undisclosed location, NBC's To Catch a War Criminal producers could pretend to be booking for Meet the Press. Yeah, Cheney has been as comfy on that show as Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live. It came out under oath in the Scooter Libby trial that Vice President Cheney's office viewed Meet the Press as our best format, a program in which Cheney could control the message. Putting him on that show, testified his communications chief, was a tactic we used often. And it was on Meet the Press after 9/11 that this psychopathic bastard Cheney said, we have to work the dark side, if you will. We're going to spend time in the shadows. Do you remember that? Oh, my God. So, Mr. Darkside shows up at NBC Studios expecting another puff job, but instead, he's confronted on camera with witnesses, documents, victims of his various war crimes. It's riveting television and real journalism as his violations of the Geneva Conventions of war and matters of torture and kidnapping are detailed. The program climaxes big time with Cheney cross-examined about Iraq and his lead role in committing the ultimate war crime, as described by the Nuremberg Tribunal, launching an unprovoked attack upon another country. And what about Henry Kissinger? You think he's too old to spring into NBC's trap? Well, he's 85 years old and he still appears frequently on NBC channels as a senior diplomat, assured that his criminal past will never come up.
We have been listening to this this talk of war, and we don't believe that. What was the question?
Invite him. He'll come. Now, as Jeff writes in Truth, there's one main reason my proposal will never launch on NBC. Because it is the long-standing, nationalistic, ethnocentric, even racist bias in our country that blocks serious scrutiny of our criminals. You see, that bias allows objective, so-called journalism, to refer matter-of-factly to Saddam's torture rooms, but not George Bush's torture rooms. Our journalists refer to mass murder of Kosovars and Rwandans, but not mass murder of Guatemalans or Salvadorans or Vietnamese caused by U.S. officials. Our journalists refer to terrorism from homemade bombs and IEDs, but not the far more lethal terror against civilians from advanced aerial bombardment. Ours. You see, the American mythology dictates that war criminals tend to have funny names, dark skin, and wear foreign garb. They can't be powerful Americans in tailored suits. Oh, no! And as Jeff Cohen concludes, this giant illusion is fostered by major U.S. news media that are allergic to discussing deadly U.S. interventions in the context of Nuremberg principles, Geneva Conventions protecting prisoners of war and noncombatants, and the United Nations Charter, especially Articles 41 and 42 on the initiation of armed force. These international laws and treaties are the law of our land, as clear as laws against murder. So, NBC News will traipse the globe in search of Rwandans while Dick and Henry sleep like babies tonight. And then they'll appear tomorrow on U.S. television offering their exalted opinions on international affairs. Jeff Cohen, who is one of the founders of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, writing at Truth Out. But isn't that the truth, huh? Don't we have just an abundance, an oversupply in the government? You know, forget the CIA or military intelligence or all these other shadowy organizations, Blackwater or Kaka or whatever the hell the names of these companies are. There are enough war criminals there to keep something like Nuremberg going for 5 years. But what about in the highest levels of the U.S. government over the past 8 years? Huh? What about them? Well, they're home free. Right? They're home free. As Nancy Pelosi said over 2 years ago, well, impeachment's off the table. Impeachment's off the table. Meanwhile, in countries like Cambodia, this was released today. The former Khmer Rouge torturer went on trial for crimes against humanity today. The first senior Pol Pot cadre to be tried by the so-called Killing Fields Court 3 decades after the deaths of 1.7 million Cambodians. Hundreds of victims, people who had been tortured and lived, showed up in court, including Saffron Robe Buddhist monks. And the act reacted with anger and relief at the sight of the 66-year-old chief, Khmer Rouge torturer, in the dock. One of the handful of survivors from the infamous S-21 prison, where at least 14,000 so-called enemies of the revolution were tortured and killed. One of the handful of survivors said, "This is a day we have waited for 30 years. Is that what we're going to have to do, truth seekers?" No, we're not. Because in this country, you commit mass murder. This has been the American way for how long? Jesus Christ, how long has this been going on? A century? A century and a half? If you take a look at the slave trade, the Middle Passage, you want to go back even further? You want to keep going back? Genocide, mass murder is as American as apple pie. That's what we do. We do that. Doesn't make any difference if it's here on Turtle Island, or if it's dragging people from their homes in Africa, or if it's Southeast Asia or Central America or South America or Central Europe. It doesn't matter. That's been the U.S. way. We will goddamn kill you, your tribe, your village, your nation state, your people, your leaders, your children, your women, your men, your babies, your dogs. We will burn you. We will destroy you. We will put white phosphorus on you. We will put Agent Orange on you. We'll do anything. Because we want either A, your resources, cheaply, if not free. Slavery was wonderful here. God damn it, we can't get it back here, so let's do it over there. We want your natural resources, or your slave labor, or a pipeline across your country, or your oil resources, or your gas. We are voracious, hungry predators. Oh, but let's go after the Rwandans. Yeah.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. This is one of those stories that I want to share with you. Forget who sent it to me, but it's from the Sacramento Bee. And the best way to this is what's coming. I mean, it's here already, but it's coming on a larger scale. In the life of every homeless person, there's a tipping point that pushes him or her from the edge to the street. Final plunge came Friday for Deanna Van Slate, whose Honda Accord, her only shelter, was impounded for expired registration. Rock bottom came In a North Sacramento parking lot, the 50-year-old woman stood in the rain, bags of possessions at her feet with nowhere to go. How am I supposed to live like this? She asked. Her downward spiral began in November when she lost her job at Home Depot. She was living in a Citrus Heights duplex but couldn't make the $850 a month rent when her 65-year-old roommate died of cancer in December. Collecting just $105 in unemployment every 2 weeks, she said she was forced to live in her car after being evicted earlier this month. She said she had just stopped to pick up the check, which wasn't available yet, on Friday afternoon when a Sacramento police officer stopped her on 16th Street at Thornton Avenue. Her registration was expired, and she had no proof of insurance, so the officer had her car towed. Desperate, she begged him, the cop, to reconsider. She said, "I was on my knees." Her registration had been expired for at least 6 months, which is the threshold for an officer to legally tow a car, said Sergeant Norm Leong, Sacramento Police Department spokesman. Leong said, quote, "Do we have to? Well, very seldom do we have anything. Do we have to do anything?" Oh, isn't that sweet? But officers who make exceptions face potential liability later if that unregistered car is involved in an accident, even if the driver's not at fault. Really? The Sacramento Police Department spokesman, Leong, said, quote, "When you make that discretion and allow someone to keep their car, you're taking that risk." And he said, if officers made exceptions for every emotional plea they received, then you'd have a lot of uninsured, unlicensed drivers on the road. Isn't that nice? Sister Libby Fernandez, who's the executive director of Loaves and Fishes, a homeless service in Seattle, said the decision was not just a legal one, but also an ethical one. She asked, "There might be a law you're guided by, but where's your compassion in any law?" Sister Fernandez arrived at the North Sacramento parking lot with other Loaves and Fishes staff members to assist the tearful woman after a nearby business owner called to report the exchange. Gary Wood, owner of Wood Brothers Floor Covering, said he watched as Miss Van Slate was pulling bags of belongings out of her car and was being hitched to a tow truck. It nearly brought him to tears, watching her cry in the rain. Wood said anybody's heart would have gone out to her. He called Loaves and Fishes for help. Sister Fernandez and her staff members loaded Miss Van Slate's belongings into a golf cart and brought her to a tent city on Bannon Street. "It was the best they could do," Fernandez said, "because all the city shelters are full." Gary Wood, the owner of the floor coverings company, said he sees many homeless people in the area. And, quote, "It's not like I have a load of compassion," end quote, for all of them. But he said watching an ordeal like Miss Van Slate's brings it home, quote, "There's probably more of this in the future," end quote. For weeks, Sister Fernandez said she's been talking to those who are Sacramento's newly homeless. Fernandez said of Miss Van Slate, the woman whose car was seized, quote, "She's as human as you and me. We're not that removed from being homeless ourselves," end quote. Sad and angry for Miss Van Slate, Sister Fernandez said she nonetheless took solace knowing somebody called for help, that other homeless campers at the tent city assisted Van Slate in finding an open spot for her belongings, and that an overwhelming and frightened Miss Van Slate still found it in her heart to share a blanket with another homeless and very cold camper. Now, that's the kind of stuff that Rush Limbaugh would just have great fun talking about. "Well, it's an urban outdoorsman. Why didn't this woman get an education?" Well, maybe she did. "No, you know, some of these people like it. They ought to be like me. I eat people like her. That's why I'm so goddamn fat. That's why I take all these drugs. I'm a cannibal, you know. I eat people. I stick a straw up their nose and suck their brains out. Well, that's the ones I let continue to live." The Republicans. But this woman? She's there because she wants to be there.
Now, that's what Glenn Beck would say. No, that's what Sean Hannity would say. No, that's probably what the blonde bitch would say.
"Oh, well, you know, we're all right. You're wrong, Malloy. Besides, you're not working for anybody. You don't exist. You're not on the air tonight."
Oh, my God, my God, my God. All right, we have a break coming here, so stick around. This thing that about Barack Obama approving plans to add more troops to Afghanistan's maw, Marines and Army Brigade, is horrifying. And I think it's at this point that I part company pretty much permanently with the Obama administration. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour, listening to the Malloy program. Got an email from William in Hollywood, who writes, as you might recall, I live in Hollywood, California. I don't drive more than 7 miles out of this area once every 4 months, and I don't have a job. I don't see foreclosed signs here. Not to say they don't exist. What I do see are other signs. In 2003, they tore down everything at one intersection a half mile from my apartment and built a huge mall, which even has a huge TV or telescreen on the corner, a corner which red light cameras ticket in the mall. Oh, a corner which red light camera ticket in the mail finds are on all four corners. When this abomination opened, the right lane was filled with cars. And, come on, William. The lane was filled with cars and non-stop traffic, I don't know, but is now a dead zone where you can park on the street with ease. They began constructing this enormous building that takes up a few blocks in 2006, but it seems to have stalled, as well as a few tall new buildings right on Vine Street and Hollywood Boulevard. But I have no idea what sort of jobs there were to create. Not so long ago, I used to go into a Radio Shack for small items like wire to solder, and there were always six or more employees and a line of people buying cell phones and filling out the two-year contracts. Last two times I was in, there was one lone employee and no line at all, and I was the sole minute consumer spending $4. Rite Aid Drugs has, but... Rite Aid Drugs has usually one cashier and a few people stocking shelves with the usual Chinese crap, and the ice cream freezer displays melted cartons frozen over with a small section of items past all hope of caring. I guess William means expiration dates. Come on, William. The traffic here used to be a roar where one could set their watch to in the weekends. And on the weekends, it was endless. Now it is a silent flow during the week and dead silence on the weekends. No more boom boxes of 300 watts blaring to fill the air with vibrations until 2 a.m. Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? I see old shops that have the black gates that never seem to open and the sidewalks holding weeks of forgotten trash,
which stand a block away from the new high-tech Borders Book Building. The Hollywood Bowl has been Disneyed and is no longer the place of picnic tables at the entry, but instead cheap shops and a paved-over area that used to be grass and trees and baskets of offering brought by the people who were there to relax and enjoy the outdoor music and fresh air. Now they have a car display and ads, or and ads to buy this or buy that. And now California is going down like a rusted ship of fools, William. Yeah, well, that's a grim picture, William. It really is. It's happening a lot. I guess the people who know about this stuff is are trying to tell us that, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And I do remember the 70s and 80s. I remember during the Carter years and the Reagan years, unemployment in double digits, inflation off the chart, interest rates. I think in 82 or 83 or 84, interest rates were up around 12, 13, 14%. Remember that? Of course, that was Carter's fault, you know, not the sainted Ronald Reagan. No. But as I've said before, that whole era kind of blew by me. I wasn't interested in buying a house, not interested in buying a car. I was doing telemarketing at the time, selling magazine subscriptions at night so I could learn to write and write for a couple of publications and mess around with avocational theater and, you know, concert production, stuff like that. Nothing that paid anything, but it was great fun. And, you know, made enough money to take care of the child support that I had to pay back then, or willingly paid. Plus, you know, I mean, always took care of that. And, but I didn't pay too much attention to the economy. It just, it was somebody else's scam. Until finally I went to work for CNN, and then it became necessary to start to pay attention. And it was pretty shocking to realize what was going on. And what I've heard now is this is going to be worse. Well, if that's the case, then like Prairie 2 has been saying for the past 6 months in some of his emails, buy canned goods. Because it's going to be that bad. I still am. I know the standard answer, but I'm just not quite sure how we let ourselves get to this point. Mad consumerism, you know, like insane, like sick, like driven consumerism. Gimme. Yeah, that had a lot to do with it. And the complicity in all this by the financial services industry and the Republican Party, both of whom hate Americans and hate the country, just see it as a great big sponge from which they could just squeeze everything that they could get. The whole function, the whole purpose of the Bush administration was to get into power, to steal and pillage and loot as much as they could here and abroad, set their moles into various government entities so that the pillage and the destruction would continue. Oh, my God. I truly wish that the so-called powers that be in this country, mostly media, would start calling for an accounting of the Bush crime family members, of what they've done. And we don't even have to get into their destruction of the economy, and they're just crapping all over the American public and our society and what constitutes morality or ethical behavior. Well, you don't even have to go there. That's a given. They are and were swine. But just focus on their violations of criminal law. The Nuremberg trials where we and the Brits and the French and who else, the Russians, where we pretty much cast in stone what would and would not be allowed by the governments of countries. And the main thing, two main things not at Nuremberg, this is Geneva Conventions, no torture. But the thing at Nuremberg, the one war crime that stood way above all others, even above genocide, was the unprovoked, just for the hell of it, invasion of another country. Oh. And what do we have here? We have Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, Libby, Negroponte, Elliot Abrams, all the people that advised him, Ashcroft, Rice, Colin Powell, all of them guilty by definition. I mean, trial? Jesus Christ, what? The prima facie evidence is right there. Well, how do you know they're guilty, Mike? Because look what they did. How do you know it's against the law? Read the conclusions from Nuremberg. But no, not in this country. No. Republican war criminals, home free. Always have been, always will be. Even if your grandfather assisted the Nazis in murdering 6 million Jews, doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any difference. Republican power structure. Ah! But when you think about Limbaugh and Tom DeLay and just write down the list. Oh, my God. Where did these swine, what kind of beast crawled out of some swamp and vomited these people into our consciousness, into our media, into our government, into our military? What? I mean, these are not pod people. These are monsters. And it makes me think there must be something wrong.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
I got an email here from Linda in Ohio who writes about vampire banks. I've heard that expression before. I've also heard zombie banks. But Linda writes about vampire banks. She writes in, the only reason the sniveling worms Graham and Greenspan say they want nationalization of the banks is because the feds will take over the banks, scrub the liabilities, scrub the bottom lines, and turn around and sell them to pre-chosen winners for fire sale prices, like $500 billion in assets for $6 or $7 billion in stock, which is nothing more than worthless paper. This forced sale is like what happened to National City Bank, 100-year-old bank, an anchor of the industry in Cleveland, Ohio. It was bought, quote, quote, by PNC Bank of Pittsburgh. Hundreds of billions in assets purchased for $5.2 billion, I believe, which was TARP money denied to National City Bank and given to PNC, with which they bought, quote, quote, National City Bank and will lay off about 10,000 people. This also happened with IndyMac, with Washington Mutual, with Wachovia and others. They are either sold to their competitors or shut down. It's all about eliminating competition for the big boys. The big boys are bankrupt, and they can only live by sucking the blood of their competitors. Yes, vampire banks. Check this out. North Carolina National Bank, NCNB, by gobbling up smaller banks on leverage, went from 18th to 8th biggest U.S. bank, overnight tripling its assets. NCNB acquired control of $20 billion in bank assets with a mere $210 million in upfront money.
William Greider wrote, quote, NCNB's case is the most spectacular example of how, in the era of deregulation, the federal government has become the all-powerful intervener in the financial marketplace. The government awards huge market shares at bargain prices to those it considers worthy and dooms thousands of other financial enterprises to punishing disadvantage. End quote. And here's an example of how it works from William Greider. Investor Ronald Perelman put up $315 million for an SNL with $12 billion in assets and even was awarded almost $900 million in tax benefits. So no, Linda writes, Graham and Greenspan are not all socialists now. They are the same sniveling, snotty scumbags they've always been and shills for the corporate sponsors. What we really need is a TARP program, T-A-R-P, that stands for Toxic Asses Removal Program. Thanks for listening, Linda, Ohio. I'm sure Prairie 2 may have mentioned that in one of his emails, but I haven't really focused on that so much, about how the winners are going to be the same pack of leeches that has always constituted the winners. And, yeah, every time one of these sales, so-called, occurs or consolidations, what's the first thing they do? That's right. Eliminate thousands, tens of thousands of jobs. What happens to those people? Screw them. They're a liability. What, are you kidding me? This is capitalism. Workers are a liability. They're a drain on the bottom line. Jesus Christ, why do you think we moved everything to Mexico and then to China and now to Vietnam and any goddamn little island we can find someplace where we can get the little brown people to work for 8 cents an hour or 10 cents a day? That's what capitalism is. And besides, back here in the States, we need our crap. We need the crap. We need things with LED lights and things that go beep, 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 and things to put on and things to take off and, you know, garbage, junk, crap. Oh, we need it. We need it. Yeah, we do, you know. And this, what was really surprising on the one hand, expected on the other for me, was when the doo-doo really hit the fan, how all these self-righteous Republican trolls were wandering around saying, well, yeah, you know why all this happened, don't you? It's those goddamn poor people that the Democrats insist to get home loans. Couldn't afford it. It's them. It's that goddamn ACORN. You know what ACORN stands for? Yeah, that's right. The last word is Negroes. Yeah, we know. But we got to have our garbage. We got to have our stuff in this country, right? Doesn't make any difference. We don't care who makes it. For 250 years, we used slaves here to make our stuff and get us our money. You know who I'm referring to by our our stuff. And when, you know, some president comes along and says, well, I think I'll free the slaves. Oh, you son of a bitch, we're going to kill you. We're just going to execute you. You can't do that. You've just destroyed capitalism. Bang! Well, very simple. You find new slaves. If you can't bring them here, you take our businesses there.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
25 before the hour. So, news is out there, of course, that Barack Obama today announced that he has approved the deployment of two brigades of U.S. troops to Afghanistan, scheduled to depart the spring and summer to fight a resurgent Taliban. This is insanity. In a statement released by the White House, Barack Obama said, quote, the situation in Afghanistan and Pakistan demands urgent attention and swift action. He went on to say the troop increase is necessary to stabilize the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan, which has not received the strategic attention, direction, and resources it urgently requires, end quote. The two combat brigades of Marines and soldiers, as well as necessary support forces, will deploy in response to the months, plural, long request by U.S. top commander in Afghanistan, General David McKiernan, and it's possible because of a U.S. military drawdown in Iraq. The Marine Corps and the Marine Expeditionary Brigade and its support forces would total about 8,000 troops, and along with the 2,000 Marines in Afghanistan, would bring the total Marine contingent there to 10,000 this spring. The brigade includes ground combat, aviation headquarters, and logistics units, according to a Marine Corps spokesman. The Army Brigade will be a striker formation that uses wheeled vehicles and will total an estimated 4,000 soldiers. Obama said during the campaign that the U.S. military needed to shift its focus from Iraq to Afghanistan, and he had been expected to announce an increase in troops there. Some estimates of what commanders say they need is as high as 30,000 more troops. This is a major mistake. Michael Parenti. Barack Obama is on record as advocating a military escalation in Afghanistan. Before sinking any deeper into that quagmire, we might do well to learn something about recent Afghan history and the role played by the United States. Less than a month after the 11th September 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, U.S. leaders began an all-out aerial assault upon Afghanistan, the country purportedly harboring Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda terrorist organization. More than 20 years earlier, in 1980, the United States intervened to stop a Soviet invasion of that country. Even some leading progressive writers who normally take a more critical view of U.S. policy abroad treated the U.S. intervention against the Soviet-supported government as a good thing. The actual story is not such a good thing. So here's some real history for you. Since feudal times, the land-holding system in Afghanistan has remained unchanged, with more than 75% of the land owned by big landlords who compromise only 3% of the rural population. In the mid-1960s, democratic revolutionary elements coalesced to form the People's Democratic Party, PDP. In 1973, the king of Afghanistan was deposed, but the government that replaced him proved to be autocratic, mismanaged, and unpopular. It, in turn, was forced out in 1978 after a massive demonstration in front of the presidential palace and after factions of the army intervened on the side of the demonstrators. The military officers who took charge invited the PDP, People's Democratic Party, to form a new government under the leadership of Nur Muhammad Taraki, a poet and novelist. This is how a Marxist-led coalition of national democratic forces came into office. John Ryan, retired professor, University of Winnipeg, who was conducting an agricultural research project in Afghanistan at about that very time, said, quote, it was a totally indigenous happening. Not even the CIA blamed the USSR for what occurred, end quote. The Taraki government proceeded to legalize labor unions, set up a minimum wage, a progressive income tax, a literacy campaign, and programs that gave ordinary people greater access to health care, housing, and public sanitation. Fledgling peasant co-ops were started, and price reductions on some key foods were imposed. The government also continued a campaign begun by the king to emancipate women from their age-old tribal bondage. It provided public education for girls and for the children of various tribes. A report in the San Francisco Chronicle in November 2001 noted that under the Taraki regime, Kabul had been, quote, a cosmopolitan city. Artists and hippies flocked to the capital. Women studied agriculture, engineering, and business at the city's university. Afghan women held government jobs. In the 1980s, there were 7 female members of parliament. Women drove cars, traveled, and went on dates. 50% of university students were women. End quote. San Francisco Chronicle. The Taraki government moved to eradicate the cultivation of opium poppy. Until then, Afghanistan had been producing more than 70% of the opium needed for the world's heroin supply. The government also abolished all debts owed by farmers and began developing a major land reform program. Professor Ryan believes that it was a, quote, genuinely popular government and people looked forward to the future with great hope, end quote. But serious opposition arose from several quarters. The feudal landlords opposed the land reform program that infringed on their holdings, and tribesmen and fundamentalist mullahs vehemently opposed the government's dedication to gender equality and the education of women and children. Because of its egalitarian and collectivist economic policies, the Taraki government also incurred the opposition of the U.S. national security state. Almost immediately after the PDP coalition came to power, the CIA, assisted by Saudi and Pakistan military, launched a large-scale intervention into Afghanistan on the side of the ousted feudal lords, reactionary tribal chieftains, mullahs, and opium traffickers. We did that. A top official within the Taraki government was Hafiz Allah Amin, believed by many to have been recruited by the CIA during the several years he spent in the United States as a student. In September 1979, Amin seized state power in an armed coup. He executed Taraki, halted the reforms, and murdered, jailed, or exiled thousands of Taraki supporters as he moved toward establishing a fundamentalist Islamic state. But within 2 months, he was overthrown by PDP remnants, including elements within the military. In late 1979, the seriously besieged PDP government asked Moscow to send a contingent of troops to help ward off the Mujahideen, the Islamic guerrilla fighters, and foreign mercenaries, all recruited, financed, and well-armed by the CIA. They asked Moscow to protect them from the Mujahideen and foreign mercenaries, all recruited, financed, and armed by the CIA. The Soviets already had been sending aid for projects in mining, education, agriculture, and public health. Deploying troops represented a commitment of a more serious and politically dangerous sort. It took repeated requests from Kabul before Moscow agreed to intervene militarily. The Soviet intervention was a golden opportunity for the CIA to transform the tribal resistance into a holy war, an Islamic jihad to expel the godless communists from Afghanistan. Over the years, the United States and Saudi Arabia expended about $40 billion on the war in Afghanistan. The CIA and its allies recruited, supplied, and trained almost 100,000 radical mujahideen from 40 Muslim countries, including Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Algeria, and Afghanistan itself. Among those who answered the call was Saudi-born millionaire right-winger Osama bin Laden and his cohorts, recruited by the CIA. After long and unsuccessful war, the Soviets evacuated the country in February 1989. It is generally thought that the PDP Marxist government collapsed immediately after the Soviet departure. Actually, it retained enough popular support to fight on for another 3 years, outlasting the Soviet Union itself by a year. Upon taking over Afghanistan, the Mujahideen fell into fighting among themselves. They ravaged the cities, terrorized civilian populations, looted, staged mass executions, closed schools, raped thousands of women and girls, and reduced half of Kabul to rubble. The CIA-backed Mujahideen. In 2001, Amnesty International reported that the Mujahideen used sexual assault as, quote, a method of intimidating vanquished populations and rewarding soldiers, end quote. There's some more. We'll get to it in a second. We have to understand what Barack Obama is doing. And we also have to understand the history of Afghanistan, how we got to this point. Not the massive thousands of year history of Afghanistan, but the immediately past political history and how we got there. And I'll bet you 1 in 10,000, 100,000, a million Americans understand that. We'll be right back.
Ringing from the battle fire, the tired warrior aims a little higher. The black falcon or the little sparrow, the healing light.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Back to what Michael Parenti has put out there for anyone who wants to either read it or listen while I read it about Afghanistan. Another untold story, a simple, brief little history here, since we are about to send more Americans to die there and to kill there. Now, what Parenti has put out here, laid out here, what we got to you, the first part of this is the immediate history, how we came to be involved against the Soviets, and how the CIA armed and assisted the rise of the Mujahideen and backed the government of Hafizullah Amin, who overthrew the Taraki government and then went on to commit murder, torture, you know, our guy. That always happens, doesn't it? That's what we do. So eventually the Mujahideen fell into fighting among themselves. They ravaged the cities, terrorized civilians, looted, mass executions, closed schools, raped thousands of women and girls, on and on and on. Ruling the country gangster style and looking for lucrative sources of income, the tribes ordered farmers to plant opium poppy. The Pakistani ISI, the intelligence agency, a close junior partner to the CIA, set up hundreds of heroin laboratories across Afghanistan. Within 2 years of the CIA's arrival, the Pakistan-Afghanistan borderland became the biggest producer of heroin in the world. Largely created and funded by the CIA, the Mujahideen mercenaries now took on a life of their own. Hundreds of them returned home to Algeria, Chechnya, Kosovo, and Kashmir to carry out terrorist attacks in Allah's name against the purveyors of secular, quote, corruption, end quote. In Afghanistan itself, by 1995, an extremist strain of Sunni Islam called the Taliban, heavily funded and advised by the ISI and the CIA, and with the support of Islamic political parties in Pakistan, fought its way to power, taking over most of the country, luring many tribal chiefs into its fold with threats and bribes, funded and advised by the CIA. The Taliban promised to end the factional fighting and banditry that was the Mujahideen trademark. Suspected murderers and spies were executed monthly in the sports stadium, and those accused of thievery had the offending hand sliced off. The Taliban condemned forms of immorality that included premarital sex, adultery, and homosexuality. They also outlawed all music, all theater, libraries, all literature, secular education, and scientific research. The Taliban unleashed a religious reign of terror, imposing an even stricter interpretation of Muslim law than used by most of the Kabul clergy. All men were required to wear untrimmed beards, and women had to wear the burqa, which covered them from head to toe, including their faces. Persons who were slow to comply were dealt swift and severe punishment by the Ministry of Virtue. A woman who fled an abusive home or charged spousal abuse would herself be severely whipped by the theocratic authorities. Women were outlawed from social life, deprived of most forms of medical care, barred from all levels of education and any opportunity to work outside the home. Women who were deemed so-called immoral, end quote, were stoned to death or buried alive. All funded by the CIA! None of this was of much concern to leaders in Washington who got along famously with the Taliban. As recently as 1999, the U.S. government was paying the entire annual salary of every single Taliban government official. Not until October 2001, when George W. Bush had to rally public opinion behind his bombing campaign in Afghanistan, did he denounce the Taliban's oppression of women. His wife, Laura Bush, emerged overnight as a full-blown feminist to deliver a public address detailing some of the abuses committed against Afghan women, all funded by the CIA. The years of war that have followed have taken tens of thousands of Afghan lives, along with those killed by cruise missiles, stealth bombers, tomahawks, daisy cutters, and landmines are those who continue to die of hunger, cold, lack of shelter, and lack of water. While claiming to be fighting terrorism, U.S. leaders have found other compelling but less advertised reasons for plunging deeper into Afghanistan. The Central Asian region is rich in oil and gas reserves. A decade before 9/11, Time magazine in 1991 reported that U.S. policy elites were contemplating a military presence in Central Asia. The discovery of vast oil and gas reserves in Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan provided the lure, while the dissolution of the Soviet Union removed the one major barrier against pursuing an aggressive interventionist policy by the United States in that part of the world. U.S. oil companies acquired the rights to some 75% of these new reserves. A major problem was how to transport the oil and gas from the landlocked region. U.S. officials opposed using the Russian pipeline or the most direct route across Iran to the Persian Gulf. Instead, they and the corporate oil contractors explored a number of alternative pipeline routes across Azerbaijan and Turkey to the Mediterranean or across China to the Pacific. The route favored by Unocal, a U.S.-based oil company, crossed Afghanistan and Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. The intensive negotiations that Unocal entered into with the Taliban regime remained unresolved by 1998 as an Argentine company placed a competing bid for the pipeline. Bush's war against the Taliban rekindled Unocal's hopes for getting a major piece of the action. We'll finish this up when we come back after the break. These are things, thanks to Michael Parenti for writing this. These are the things that we need to know about Afghanistan, because we are about to send another 10, 15, 20,000 Americans to Afghanistan to die and to kill. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This article by Michael Parenti, Afghanistan, Another Untold Story, is one that everybody in the United States should be aware of, should understand. Very few people in this country, what, 1%, one half of 1%, understand the issue of Afghanistan to a degree necessary to know whether or not to support or oppose our longstanding policy in that sad country, especially now that Barack Obama has decided to increase our military presence there. I guess it doesn't take long once you have the trappings of executive power and all the codes to the nuclear weapons to start unleashing American military against whomever for whatever reason. I defy anyone, up to and including all the government officials who make these decisions, to produce a single reasonable salient argument for our continued military presence in Afghanistan. And the story about, well, we need to be there because Pakistan is a nuclear-armed, psychotic Muslim country that is about to disintegrate, yada, yada, yada. It's about to disintegrate because of what we're doing. But isn't that always the case? Back to Parenti. Interestingly enough, neither the Clinton nor Bush administrations ever placed Afghanistan on the official State Department list of states charged with sponsoring terrorism, despite the acknowledged presence of Osama bin Laden as a guest of the Taliban government. Such a so-called rogue state designation would have made it impossible for a U.S. oil or construction company to enter an agreement with Kabul for a pipeline to the Central Asian and oil gas fields. In sum, well in advance of the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. government had made preparations to move against the Taliban and create a compliant regime in Kabul and a direct U.S. military presence in Central Asia. The 9/11 attacks provided the perfect impetus, stampeding U.S. public opinion and reluctant allies into supporting our military intervention. One might agree with John Ryan, who argued that if Washington had left the Marxist Iraqi government alone back in 1979, quote, there would have been no army of Mujahideen, no Soviet intervention, no war that destroyed Afghanistan, no Osama bin Laden, and no September 11th tragedy. End quote. That it would be asking too much for Washington to leave unmolested a progressive leftist government that was organizing the social capital around collective public needs rather than private accumulation. U.S. intervention in Afghanistan has proven not much different from U.S. intervention in Cambodia, Angola, Mozambique, Ethiopia, Nicaragua, Grenada, Panama, and elsewhere. It had the same intent of preventing egalitarian social change and the same effect of overthrowing an economically reformist government. In all these instances, the intervention, the U.S. intervention, brought retrograde elements into ascendance, left the economy in ruins, and pitilessly laid waste to many innocent lives. The war against Afghanistan, a battered, impoverished country, continues to be portrayed in U.S. official circles as a gallant crusade against terrorism. If it ever was that, it also has been a means to other things, like destroying a leftist revolutionary social order, gaining profitable control of one of the last vast untapped reserves of the Earth's dwindling fossil fuel supply, and planting U.S. bases and U.S. military power into still another region of the world. In the face of all this, Obama's call for change rings hollow. Michael Parenti, writing at michaelparenti.org, if you want a copy of this yourself. And what brings this up is Obama's announcement today that he has approved the deployment of 2 brigades of U.S. troops to Afghanistan this spring and summer to fight a resurgent Taliban. So the bloodsuckers, the murderers, are on the rise once again. And for all of us who truly, honestly, genuinely thought there was a chance to bring this madness to an end under an Obama administration, forget it. Forget it. Now, what does it mean? Does it mean anything to you that we're going to send another 12, 14,000 U.S. troops into the place where empires go to die? Afghanistan, does it mean anything? Once again, this is going to mean a lot to the families of the soldiers and Marines who are sent there with no objective, no exit plan, no purpose other than to protect the oil companies that have decided this is where they want to establish their next beachhead, so to speak. And by the way, Hamid Karzai, as most of us know or should know, was a former Unocal oil company lobbyist. And he is now the president of one of the most corrupt narco states on earth, Afghanistan. And the only reason he's in power is because we continue to support him. And the only reason we continue to support him is because he is doing what he was supposed to do when we installed him, making sure that there is a route secure enough for the pipeline to bring all that natural gas and oil out of the Caspian Sea area. Of course, the Russians look at that a different way, as do the Chinese. In the meantime, the ISI and the CIA, ISI being the Pakistan secret murder team, the CIA being the American secret murder team, have worked diligently to completely destabilize that area. An area where destabilization means if the government in Pakistan collapses, the recently elected government, then those members of the Pakistan military who are Taliban supporters and members of the ISI who are Taliban supporters then come to power and have their hands on nuclear weapons and the systems to deliver those nuclear weapons to India, Iran. Does that surprise you? So here we go again. Here we go always, without end. Have you noticed that? It just keeps happening. The U.S. adventure of death and destruction in Afghanistan further means that, means to a greater degree, that more of the few remaining assets we have in this country are going over to kill and pillage and destroy and burn and bomb a country that once again has the misfortune of geography. They are in the way, Afghanistan is, as is Pakistan, they are in the way of the pipeline that the oil oligarchs, killers, murderers want in order to get the oil and natural gas out of the landlocked Caspian Sea area. Afghanistan is in the way. What do? Burn the goddamn place until we have in place a government that will do exactly what the oil companies tell them to do. Pakistan, burn it until it collapses. And we can put in place a government that will do exactly what the oil companies tell it to do. The one problem here, though, is Islamic fundamentalism / nuclear weapons.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It is 21 past the hour. Email here from, I'll just leave it at a listener. Mike, my son is an airman. It is my deepest regret that I encouraged him to join the military. We fit the typical demographic, poor and brown-skinned. Like a damn fool, I wanted to believe that our children were coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan when Mr. Obama was elected, but he tricked us. I am a duped fool. If my son tells me that he is to deploy to this realm of hell, I will be one breath away from my own death. If the worst happens, I will not survive my grief. And I worked hard for the Obama campaign. Isn't that irony for you? I will never vote again. It's pretty astonishing. Wasn't Barack Obama wasn't he professor of history? Was he? No? I don't even remember. But if you and I understand, and we do, the idiocy of doing what we're doing in Afghanistan, if you and I understand it, if we understand the fact that nobody ever in the history of the world has ever subdued or subjugated the Afghan people. Nobody. You know the list. Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, British Empire, Soviet Empire, and us. Come on. If we know that, and we do, you and I, because we know the history of that country, yes, we do. If you and I know that, then why does the Obama administration, why has it apparently made a decision to spit in the face of history, to arrogantly stomp in with more troops? And as far as what we are doing there, the Afghan people, the people in the so-called tribal areas of the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, mountainous regions that unless you're born there, you have no idea what it is. Get on Google Earth and cruise over to Peshawar, cruise over to Kabul, cruise down into those mountains and valleys. Take a hard look at it. This is where the crust of the earth was just in rebellion against itself over millions of years. And the canyons, the mountains, oh my God. No wonder empire after empire has been broken into pieces there. This is craziness. This really is craziness. You know, somewhere Donald Rumsfeld is just smacking his lips and rubbing his hands together and thinking about all the new corpses that this action by Obama is going to produce. The Afghan people, the Pakistan people, they've had enough of U.S. Predator drone aircraft sending missiles into their houses, their wedding parties, their birthday parties, their lives, their schools, what remains of them. They're sick of it. And this is how we really bring peace and to the area and settle all this stuff and calm it down and try to assist the Afghan people into reestablishing what they want. Of course we don't like what the Taliban does. Of course we don't. Do we like any, to any different degree, what the Saudis do? They do the same goddamn thing. In Saudi Arabia, women aren't allowed to drive a car. If you commit a crime that the Ministry of Virtue declares a crime, you're liable to have one of your body parts lopped off with a sword. And yet Saudi Arabia, oh my God, our good friends, our buddies, the Bush family business partners, and apparently a crime organization that has now endeared itself to the new U.S. administration. How else to explain what we're doing there? It's unbelievable, isn't it? Huh? Don't you ever wonder what did Joe Biden say about Russia? It's time for us to hit the reset button and our relationships with them. How about we hit the reset button where it concerns this whole damn country of ours? Huh? What do you think?
Buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more died than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of death row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. Oil money, Enron, the American Empire!
Before the hour. Okay, there's more here, but let's do some calls if you'd like to. The number here is 800-989-1480. And we're Ian, we're having some problems here with our call situation, so if you would like to put some folks on the air and let us know, we'll do it that way. All righty? 800-989-1480 is the number. Whatever we have discussed tonight, if you'd like to make a comment or add something, take something away, whatever you want to do. Cat Mary in Memphis says, Mike, when you read that email about the person whose son will be in Afghanistan, I sat here and cried. I know what she's talking about. Not from wars, but something else. I want to hug her, rock her, say, oh, my sister, please tell her she's not alone. Cat Mary in Memphis. It's just one last. I want to just say this one last time. I said the other day, you all have. I'd appreciate it if you just don't ask me about Randy Rhodes. Okay, there's absolutely not a thing I can tell you about Randy Rhodes. You need to contact her. And surely you know how to do that. I have no idea. I have no reason to contact Randy Rhodes. But y'all have got to understand something, that there is nothing I can tell you about Randy Rhodes. Okay? So please do me a favor. Don't ask me. No more emails. Especially the ones that are very irritating, the ones that say, well, I'm a Nova M subscriber. I have a right to know. Okay, but, I don't have anything that I can tell you about Randy Rhodes. The fact that you're a NovaM subscriber is great. I mean, thank God for that. But if you really are just so hell-bent on knowing what is up with Randy Rhodes, contact her or her lawyers. That's the only safe way to do it, okay? But asking me this constant, I mean, over the past few days, this avalanche of emails, I don't speak for her. I've only met her 3 times in my life. I told you all once before that in this business, I don't have any friends. What she does or any talk show host does is their business. It's their career, their life, their karma, their trip, their, you know, whatever. And I'm just, my fingers are starting to hurt from, I'm sorry to sound pissy about this, but, you know, enough's enough already, all right? Randy Rhodes doesn't tell me anything about her life, A, B, I don't want to know. And if you want to know, ask her. And if you don't know how to get in touch with her, I don't know how to help you. So, please, do me a favor, all right? Do me a favor. Stop asking me about Randy Rhodes. Stop emailing me. Stop posting stuff.
Well, Malloy knows.
Yes, Malloy knows. And Malloy's not going to say anything. Nothing. You're going to have to do it on your own. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to your phone calls. Gary is calling from Florida, listening on WINZ. I think our board is back up now. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. I'd like to thank you for that educational and interesting and important lecture you just gave us about the history of Afghanistan.
Well, thanks to Michael Parenti, who wrote it. You can get the whole thing at his website. And I really do think that knowing that stuff, and that's a very quick encapsulation of Afghanistan and our involvement there. But we've got to know this. We just
that's about all I could handle. I mean, but it was really great. And I also have another comment. Not only are we going to do battle there, but we're going to do battle in a weakened condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're finished.
Why do you think we have to be there?
Well, you said why, to protect the oil interests.
Right.
I was listening.
Yeah. I just, you know, what it amazes me, Gary, is how few Americans have a clue, not just about the geography or the history of that country, but why we're there. You know how long we've been at war there? We are in the eight years of war in Afghanistan. Eight. And I'll bet you, I don't know what I would bet you, $1,000, whatever. If you stood out on the street in Miami, I stood out in the street in Atlanta, and just stopped people at random and said, hey, why are we in Afghanistan? I'll bet you 100% of them wouldn't have a clue. They couldn't answer. Oh, no, stop terrorism.
Yeah, stop the Taliban.
Stop Taliban. What's the Taliban? Well, it's them. Who's them? Yeah. You know, the terrorists. Jesus, I'm sick of this.
I'll tell you, Mike, I'm very worried about our future.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. We seem to be on a trajectory that is going one way, no matter who we put in office, no matter whether it's the presidency or the Congress or really. And it's getting very frustrating. Listening to the right-wing garbage all over the airwaves and knowing that the right-wing garbage is going to increase and get louder because of the Obama administration. Seriously, sometimes I just want to shut it down and go home. And I think to myself, hey, yo, you are home.
Yeah.
You know, there's no place you can go. So,
you know, and speaking of right-wing, isn't it just unbelievable that they have a unanimous obstructionist attitude?
Oh, yeah. Right down. That's why I said, why don't these lying sons of bitchin' Republicans who really think it's so cool to be against this, why don't they refuse any of this money,
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that now.
Yeah, into their home district. Just
well, I know the answer, because they're whores.
Well, that's true, too. No offense to sex workers, but that's true. All right, Gary, thanks, man.
Good night.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Tom in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Mike?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. How you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm calling in, you know, the Afghanistan thing. My youngest brother, I wish he was here. He lives in Laos, but he traveled twice for a month with the Russians, or with the Mujahideen when they were fighting the Russians. He smuggled in through Pakistan and illegally traveled with a group of six other Mujahideen through the mountains, and he filmed and saw everything. And he brought back a friend who fought the Russians 7 years, and I can't mention his name because now it's really sad. He's been in the U.S. for 12 years, and he got trained. You know, he's got two kids. His wife's from Afghanistan. For the money, he is now on his second trip to Afghanistan interpreting. And I just find it so sad. And he called my mom, and he's like a brother to our family. And
God help him if the Taliban
get
a hold of him.
But you know, the other thing, I hate to shock some of the listeners maybe that aren't hip to it, but his wife, who's just brilliant, sweetest woman, lives here in Madison. And his mother, my friend's mother, had to leave. She went through the Russians. She's probably 65 or 70. And she finally had to leave Kabul when we came in because we blew her house up twice.
Yeah.
And she lasted the Russians. And my friend, who fought the Russians 7 years, was tortured by him for a year and escaped from the prison. He told me, you know, he was in contact with all his friends back there. He said the Americans are worse than the Russians. And his wife said, "Tom, I have friends who have been raped by American soldiers," her friends, who she calls on the phone. I mean, we're doing there, it's just sad.
Yeah.
It's sad.
We're not
the American public.
Yeah, it on an emotional level, yeah, it is sad. On a realistic level, it is criminal. On a spiritual level, I've said this many times, we are doing things and have done things that are setting ourselves up for, just an enormous payback. You know, call it what you want. I've said before, karma is the Sanskrit word for balance. That's all it means.
I totally agree with you. And I want to make one comment because while I was waiting on the phone, I heard the thing about these people, Randy Rhodes. It's like, I had a really good therapist 20 years ago. It's like, it's such a dysfunctional country. Anybody asks me about somebody else, I always tell them, go ask them.
Right,
don't ask me.
Right, right.
I'm not them.
Right. I'm supposed to be some conduit of information.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not.
Well, grow up. Have the courage. Go find out for yourself.
There you
ask
go.
Them.
Thanks. I appreciate
Thanks,
it. All right,
Mike.
All right, Tom. Have a good night.
You guys rock. I love you.
Thanks.
All right,
appreciate
Tom.
It. Take care. Yeah, you know, you handle it yourself. You know, the only reason people want to know about Randy Rhodes is because people like gossip and, you know, I want to know. Please, you know, give your humble and obedient servant here a break. Thank you. It's 10 before the hour. Boy, time just flies by when you're having fun, doesn't it? I got an email earlier tonight that said, you know, I'm just tired of hearing your program with all the negative stuff, the bad stuff. Why don't you talk about anything good? Are you kidding me? I'd love to do that. You know, think of something. Send me some topics that you would like to hear covered on this program that are good. All right? No, I know I'm being kind of a smartass right now, but I understand that. I really do. I've had to try to force myself into this, contorted posture so that I don't listen to, unless absolutely necessary, stuff on television and or radio during the day. I just try to stay completely away from it. I'll tune into a serious satellite music channel, you know, listen to classical music or listen to new age music, anything to stay away from this stuff. And then there comes a point in every day, of course, when, you know, you're in this business, not too much you can do, where you got to go, okay, let's take a look at the rundown. You start by looking at financial news and economic news, and then U.S. foreign policy news, and then what the demon terrorist organization, the Republican Party, is doing. I swear to God, the Republican Party needs to be murdered. The sooner the better. Oh, my God. And then we can go to work on reforming the Democratic Party. If it won't reform, we need to kill that one, too. Right? Ah, you think? But the real terrorists in this, you know, Democrats are not yet, Democratic Party is not yet at the status of a terrorist organization. It's getting close, but it's not there yet. The Republican Party is and has been a terrorist organization since the 60s. That's all it is. And it's fed itself and gotten fat and disgusting and bloated and warty looking on the lifeblood of this country. On our young people and our financial resources and our natural resources. And it's this huge, sucking, nasty, stinking mass of human protoplasm like Jabba the Hutt. And its leadership is Rush Limbaugh, Joe the Plumber, Sarah Palin. Creepy, idiotic, dumbass white people that don't have a clue about anything. But there they are. There they are. And meanwhile, all around the country, Washington, D.C. Now, there's a real conservative city. Chicago. There's another one. New York. Oh, yeah. Cities, I could go down the list. Well, let's get rid of liberal or progressive talk radio. Let's get rid of it.
Why?
Well, in the marketplace of ideas, it doesn't work.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Bullshit. Stuff. Oh, well. Thanks to the crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Ben Birch, our technical advisor and podcast manager, our economic advisor, Bruce Enberg, politely known on this program as Prairie 2. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent, and the ethical advisors, yes, we have them, to this program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer is Catherine Bay, who has really had a lot of fun the past few days trying to deal with this tidal wave of garbage and misinformation put out there about A, Nova M, B, us, C, Randy Rhodes, D, just on and on and on. Oh, my God. Maybe it's the nature of talk radio that makes people feel like, I need to know everything. What size underwear do you wear? You know, all that stuff. Well, okay. But sometimes when you'd like to fill people in, you can't because you've been threatened by attorneys. Open your mouth and we'll own you. Sometimes that happens, you know. So, again, I appreciate the fact that you all are going to stop asking me or Kathy. A lot of websites out there, right wing, left wing, nutcases, from top to bottom, who have just absolute garbage. Page after page of starts a speculation, and then it, you know, echoes around this web long enough until it becomes wisdom. Well, here's what happened. No, it isn't. And you know what? So far, I have not seen anything that's even close to the truth. Nothing. nothing posted anywhere that is even in the same county as the truth. But it's out there, and that's just the way it goes. You know, that's just the way it goes. That's just the way it goes. So, again, thank you for respecting my request that you take a look at whatever you want to take a look at about the Randy Rhodes saga somewhere else. Somewhere else. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But I'll tell you this. If there was one website, one posting, one message board that had it right, I'd send you all there. I would say, well, here, go here. It's all there. Okay? But I read this stuff, and I read these emails, and I read the speculation. I think, Jesus H. Christ, where does this stuff come from? Oh, well. Oh. It damn sure doesn't affect us. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.